right. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon on 720 WGN. We'll talk Harry Potter a little bit later and IVs to help you bounce back maybe from Lollapalooza. This company I'm going to talk to, IV Me, they've actually got a special going for the next couple of days. If you bring your Lollapalooza bracelet in, they will pump you up with fluids and get you back in the game. But it's Monday, and on Mondays, we always start with Chicago Inno. Will Flanagan and Karis Husted are in the studio on this Monday. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Steve. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's so nice to talk to you guys again. Mondays aren't the same without Chicago Inno. You guys have any Lollapalooza stories, or have you all outgrown that?
I was there on Saturday, had a wonderful time. I got two IVs in right now, so I'm a happy user.
Yep, and I stayed far away so that I don't have to use an IV on Monday after the music festival.
So you're more responsible. You're prepared for today, and Flanagan isn't so much, right?
Steve, I think it's convenient that you've been out since Pokemon Go launched.
Yeah.
Jim and I, we've been talking. I feel like you're just on a month-long Pokemon Go adventure.
You know, it's funny. We talked to Philip Weiss from Seyfarth Shaw at work, and they had they advise workplaces about how to deal with parties or sexism, controversy, things like that. We might actually hook up with them later this week to talk about Pokemon Go and how it's interfered at the workplace.
Who knew
that?
Yeah,
I never thought I'd be one of these guys who takes pictures of the food he eats. But on my trip to Prague and Vienna earlier this summer, I was doing just that and sending it out on Twitter and all. And now, Karis, you write about this new company or upstart that wants to help actually feed the poor from pictures people take of the food they eat at restaurants. Explain that for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's called Gift-A-Meal. And basically, when you take a photo of your food, it has devised a way to make that photo count for a lot more than just Instagram likes. So when you download their app and you go to one of their partner restaurants, you take a photo of your food. They recognize that you've been there, you've taken a photo, and you've shared it with your friends. And then they pay for the distribution of food to a local food pantry. So it kind of takes this phenomenon of people loving to take foodie pictures and post them out and show them to all their friends, and tries to make it into a social media marketing tool that also helps people in need.
All right, where does the money come? Is it these restaurants that put up the money for the free meal?
Yeah, exactly. So it's and you don't get a free meal out of it. You're still paying for the meal.
Right.
It's just that they are then paying for the logistics to get that extra meal to the food pantry. So it is a social enterprise. They are making money off of it. Restaurants enter into a partnership with Gift-A-Meal. They pay anywhere from $50 to $200 per month to be a part of the partnership. And then Gift-A-Meal takes that money as revenue and then also uses a portion of that funds to distribute the meals.
Okay, so we got two limitations right away then, right? You've got to go to not just your favorite restaurant, you've got to go to a restaurant that is partnering with Gift-A-Meal. And then, right, we've talked about this where people are moving away from apps. So you got to convince people to actually download the app.
Yeah, that's something I asked them about as well, because that's something we've been discussing a lot at Chicago Inn, is like, why would anyone download an app anymore, right? It's, you've got so many apps on your phone, you don't want one more. But what they've actually done is they're using table toppers at the individual restaurants, and they said that has actually increased downloads by 400%. And what they found is that people want to work with restaurants and work with companies that they know are doing some sort of social good. That is a huge way to bring more customer loyalty. And so if people feel like, hey, I can easily do something to help someone in need while enjoying a meal at a restaurant I'm going to be at anyway, why wouldn't I do that? And so far, it's worked out for them. They're in over 100 restaurants between St. Louis and Chicago.
Will, when's the last time you took a picture of some of the food you ate?
I'm taking a picture of the Snicker bar right now.
No, oh, good.
I mean,
well,
that's not good
for anybody, Will Flanagan.
This is all about the power of peer-to-peer marketing. All of these brands, whether it's brick-and-mortar or online, they're trying to figure out not how they pay for traditional display, but how do they get to these influential online users to spread the word about themselves.
Right.
And one way is to partner with a social enterprise on like this and kind of get in front of users and say, all you have to do is share us with your friends, and here's XYZ we'll do. There's actually a couple companies here in Chicago that are trying to leverage this power through a variety of ways. Some are paying you for your Instagram posts. So this is a really kind of interesting new marketing channel where these startups are trying to figure out how to tap into influential people to help brands spread the word.
That's what struck me about this is that it, I mean, it does good. It helps people who need food to eat get food to eat. But the people who created this did it as a marketing tool for restaurants.
Yeah, it does seem like one of those rare tech win-wins, doesn't it? A lot of times you kind of roll your eyes, like, you know, do I really need a pizza delivered to me this much, this faster? You know, do I really right. need a motorized bag that can, you know, I can sit on and can take me across the airport? I know one of your favorite companies, Steve.
Wait a minute.
This is doing good for everybody. Yeah, it's a rare win-win startup.
I'm so glad you brought that up. It's called Moto Bag, right?
Moto Bag, mm-hmm. Yeah. They're actually crushing it on Indiegogo.
They were on Good Morning America this morning. I get up, I roll downstairs, turn on the TV, and here are all these people riding around their suitcases in the ABC studios. So yeah.
It's one of those things that's so silly, it just might work. You never know what the future is going to hold. We could all be rolling around the airport soon.
Well, that's too bad. Carlos Houston is there. Will Flanagan as well. They write for Chicago. I know we're going to take a break, come back, and talk more about drones in Chicago, and also maybe very quickly about, I want to talk about this Facebook alert, too, because that might open some eyes for people. But right now it's 12:18. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN Monday afternoon. We're looking at 12:27 on this beautiful summer day. On Mondays, we talk to the folks from Chicago Inner. Will Flanagan is the general manager of Chicago Inner. Did I do that right? Or managing editor? Managing editor?
GM.
GM, okay, we'll take that. Carlos Husted is one of the writers, and often we have Jim Dahlke in, but Carlos is sitting in today, and mm-hmm. I'm glad you are, because you wrote all the stories I want to talk about.
It's been an interesting week.
Tell me about this Facebook thing. Now, you know, I know Facebook has this ability for you to check in, to notify people that you're safe in the event of a world catastrophe, maybe mm-hmm. the terror attack in Paris or an earthquake or things like that. But something similar or the same thing kicked in Chicago last week. I'm not sure I understand that.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of people are very familiar with the safety checks in terms of, as you mentioned, sort of a world disaster, the Paris attacks or an earthquake, a natural disaster. It basically prompts you on your Facebook newsfeed to check in with friends and family and let them know that you're safe in the event of a disaster. But recently, Facebook has started to try out this new feature called community-generated Facebook safety check. So what this means is that an algorithm is keeping track of what people are posting, status updates, that sort of thing. And when it notices that a lot of people in one general geographic area are posting about some sort of disaster, whether it be a shooting or a wildfire, it will verify that a dangerous event has occurred with a third party, some sort of third party company. And then it will send out a safety check to the people who posted about that. And those people can in turn send a safety check to their friends and family. So basically last week, last Thursday, there was a shooting in Back of the Yards where two people died and a third teenage girl died from an asthma attack after witnessing the violence. Basically, Facebook picked this up because a lot of people were talking about it and sent out a safety check based off of this new feature called a community-generated safety check.
So if I tweeted or if I mentioned on Facebook that I was near this event, then they would give me an ability to check in with my friends and family to say I was safe.
Yes, exactly.
It seems like they might be overplaying their hand here a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, I think there was definitely a lot of confusion after it happened because I think for some people, we've only seen these safety checks usually happen in a natural disaster or a terrorist attack. So some people were saying, so is now this Facebook saying that Chicago's gun violence is as worthy of a safety check as a natural disaster? What does that say about our city? What does that say about our neighborhoods? And other people, because you can send this out to anyone, they don't, after you send out the initial community-generated safety check, any one of those people can send it to anyone across, you know, across the country, across the city. A lot of people were confused because they were getting them when they were in Grant Park and the shooting was in Back of the Yard. So there was a lot of confusion with it actually rolling out.
It just seems like Facebook has had trouble with this on a grander scale, and we'll see how they do on something smaller.
Yeah.
Well, I had tacos for dinner last night. Wouldn't it be cool if I had a taco copter who could deliver them into my house?
What a segue, Steve. It's so good to have you back. Man, Facebook safety check the taco copters. Yes, that is what we need out of technology is drones for tacos. And fortunately, Well, unfortunately, it doesn't exist, but we do have a amazing collection of professors and entrepreneurs down at IIT who are working on this.
Yeah. So, I'll jump in on this because sure. I watched this in action. So we are basically one step closer to the taco copter, which is super exciting. There's this Illinois Tech professor who's been working for the last 3 years to make an autonomous drone framework. And this basically means that you can summon a drone to a specific GPS location using your phone.
So, but the difference is, I mean, we've talked about Amazon using drones to deliver, but they're setting it from the takeoff point. This is different because you're setting it from the receiver point.
Yeah, exactly. You can summon them. And the other thing too is, I don't even think Amazon is working on like self-flying drones, or they probably are, but they haven't cleared a lot of the hurdles yet. What a lot of people do now is that you can have a controller and you can be controlling the drone, and that's what most people have for when they're just flying a drone around. With an autonomous drone, you're not doing any of the work. The drone is using its own software in order to navigate to its destination, so you're not doing any of the work.
Yeah,
Cars, Houston, go ahead, Will.
Oh, sorry. Well, what's really cool about this is that it's part of a larger trend of post-launch technology that you're starting to see developed in Chicago, whereas everybody talks about drones and driverless cars and even the SpaceX rocket launches, and those are really cool. Those are fun things to talk about and work on. But say driverless cars happens. Say we start flying privately to space. There's going to be so much more opportunity for post-launch. And that's what you know, this team is working on.
That's
where the taco copter comes in. So, you know, you have driverless cars. Not everybody's going to win driverless cars, but you are going to need technology for the dashboards.
Mm-hmm. You need the taco car.
The taco car. So you're going to have all of these things colored around these emerging industries. And I like that Chicago is already thinking pragmatically about that. It's like, let the coast win the core battle. We're going to have all of these things developed and ready to go once you know, regulation says yes.
Yeah, I like that. So you clear the field, and then you start to fill the field up again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Will Flanagan, General Manager for Chicago Inno, Caris Husted, is one of the great reporters there. You should check it out. It's a great site. I look at it every day. Thanks, you guys. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. I don't know, Dr. Jack Dibas. Sounds like there was a Dr. Feelgood song there just playing in the background. Welcome to the Business Lunch. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me. The
man behind IVME Wellness and Performance, and I just want to remind people to keep those Lollapalooza bracelets because they're good for a discount at IVME until, for a couple days now, Wednesday or so.
Correct.
Tell me, what is IVME?
So what we are is a specialized medical service, basically, revolving around delivery of IV fluids to patients. We also have a few other medical services we provide, but that's the basis of how we got started, and now we're adding on some other things. So it's directed medical care, very specialized.
You know, when I read about it, I think of the oxygen bars that gained some notoriety 10 or 15 years ago. Is this something similar to an oxygen bar?
On steroids. Basically, what we do is the same thing we do in the hospital. I'm a surgeon, and we give fluids every day to people. So we're bringing that same concept to an outpatient therapy. So basically, we're a doctor's office where you can also get IV fluids instead of going to an emergency room or somewhere else to get those kind of services.
But you are pretty limited to the IV fluids or oxygen, some shots and things like that, right? You're not a general physician's office.
No, we do, like I said, the IV therapies. We do injections, so Botox, Juvederm, B12 shots, different kinds of intramuscular shots. And then we're going to be expanding services also in the near future to do blood work. So if you want to know your cholesterol level or something like that, you can come on in. And then also a couple of other services we're going to be adding that are kind of wrapped into the blood work.
And I was going to ask you about this a little bit later in the interview, but it seems like this is a good spot. It sounds to me like you're one of those doctors who is trying to get out of the traditional medical profession in a way, get away from the paperwork and the insurance and find a way to make it in medicine sort of a different way. Is that a fair way to put it?
On the surface, yes. I think no one who goes into medicine really wants to deal with paperwork and insurance that. I still enjoy, I love doing surgery, so I still am active as a trauma surgeon. I also do general surgery. But I was more frustrated with the fact that people who needed simple medical care, we were going overboard on it, ordering so many more tests, making people jump through all kinds of hoops and rings to get something that's so simple as getting an IV. So I just wanted to bring that to people who didn't otherwise know a physician or know a nurse. Anybody who's in the medical field has been doing this for decades. If you ask any paramedic, they'll say, oh, yeah, we've been doing that for ourselves for a long time.
They've been giving themselves IVs.
Yeah. You know, I do it all the time when I feel like I'm getting sick. And then, lo and behold, I don't get sick anymore. So that's kind of how I started it. But it's not so much that I'm disaffected with the medicine and how I do my job. It's just that I wanted to do a little bit more.
It just seemed to me like it was a guy who was covering his bases a little bit, right, to get out of the crush of the insurance and paperwork and all of that. The publicity you get is always about hangover first, and that an IV can help alleviate a hangover. True?
It can. And that is true. We do most of the publicity is garnered toward that because that's kind of like the splashy, splashy thing that people can easily talk about and everybody can kind of identify with. But we, you know, we mostly are going for the health and wellness sector because it does make you feel better. But it does, yes, it definitely works for hangovers.
How does it work for a hangover? How does it work?
So a hangover, you're going to be somewhat dehydrated, but also the toxins from the breakdown of the alcohol that are floating around in your blood, and the fluids will help you kind of flush that out. And we also give different medicines directed at different symptoms. So if you're nauseous, we'll give you an anti-nausea medicine. If you have headaches, we'll give you an anti-pain medicine, an anti-inflammatory. So and we'll also slap some oxygen. You mentioned oxygen bars on patients if they like. That'll help kind of blow the cobwebs out a little bit, so to speak. So
hangovers don't usually last all that long, though. Is it worth coming in and dropping $100 to get an IV?
It depends who you are and how long your hangovers are. I mean, they're just like any other little illness. Some people get knocked out for a week with a cold. Some people takes, you know, half a day.
And some people have a big day coming up, I guess, and they don't want to deal with that headache or nausea for
It's a time value proposition. If you have something going on and you can't be laid up for it, you come in and we'll get you right back on your feet.
Now, the other thing, when I go to a doctor and I say I've got a terrible cold or the flu, they say, yeah, it's a cold and the flu, and it's just got to work itself out. The doctor's office isn't offering me the option of an IV. Why are they not doing it and you are?
That's a good question. Because mostly what a doctor will say is go home, get some rest.
Take some fluids.
Take plenty of fluids. You know, take some vitamins. You know, you can do echinacea, you can do zinc, you can do, you know, emergency, all that stuff. All the over-the-counter stuff, and it'll eventually go away. Which it will, but all those things that the doctor tells you, we kind of combine into a one-hour therapy that's going to get you right back on your feet. If you have time to sit around for 3 days and be sick, that's great for you. I think a lot of people don't. So
if I have let's say a cold, because I don't know what a cold really is anymore. But let's say I have, I'm feeling like I have a terrible cold. I go in and I can get an IV, and that's going to make me feel better.
It will, and it depends on the timing of it. I recommend that you come in right at the first inkling that you're getting something. For me, my throat will start to tickle. And I'll wake up and my lips will be a little dry and I know something's coming. So what that'll do is, a lot of times when you're sick, you get more dehydrated than what you think you are. You're not taking in enough fluids, and plus the slight increase in your temperature will ramp up your insensible, fluid losses. So what I'll do is I'll give myself a couple liters of fluid, some high dose vitamin C, which will help boost my immune system, some B complex, which boosts your energy. Because a lot of times you get that blah feeling with a cold. And then if I have any aches and pains, I'll give an anti-inflammatory.
And we were talking about this. I saw one quote in an article, and I don't know if he was speaking specifically to you or in general, but he said, this is like using a bulldozer to do something that you can do with a shovel. How do you answer that sort of criticism?
It would be if, like I said, if you have time to be sick.
Maybe you need the house to be done a little more quickly, I guess.
Exactly. You know, it depends what. Yeah, you can dig the Panama Canal with a shovel, I guess, but they still be digging it.
Right. And how often, I mean, do you have regulars?
We do.
And what would a regular come to be serviced for?
I mean, hopefully not a hangover. We'll get business executives and business travelers. This was you hear about it in movies, but as a physician, you don't know these people. But there are people who will fly to London and they'll come back and they'll have to be on a plane to Tokyo the next day, or they'll be, flying all over the place, and they get so worn out and just lack of energy, lack of sleep. Poor eating habits. You're on the planes and they're dehydrated and they're just an incubator for illness.
And they can feel the difference. It makes a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so $100, is that the baseline?
The least expensive is $89, and that's just for the fluids, and then we go up to $179.
And that's the reason why people might wait around 3 days, right? Because this isn't covered currently by insurance. It's out of pocket for people.
Correct.
Okay, so there's that. But you're growing too, right? Adding a second location soon.
Yes, we should be opening in Marina Towers, hopefully within the next 6 months.
I can't wait till next time I get sick, doctor. I'm going to come see you.
Definitely do.
Dr. Jack Dibas, the owner of IV Me Wellness and Performance. How do people get more information?
They can go to our website at www.ivmechicago.com, or they can just give us a call. We're on social media. We have at IV Me Shy is the Instagram. And we're also on Twitter, I believe, IV Me Chicago, and Facebook.
All right, people can find it pretty easily, I think. Look, it was great to talk to you. It's very intriguing to me. I had no idea such a thing existed. So hope we can check in again.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and for some reason I want to play Quidditch. I don't quite understand. Trey Williams, a reporter for MarketWatch.com, is on a phone line. He's going to tell me why I want to play Quidditch. Trey, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
I was reading a piece you wrote over the weekend, and I don't do as much as I used to, but I do a lot of work with authors and books and author interviews and things like that. And I read that the Harry Potter play, Cursed Child, Parts 1 and 2, is coming out in book form. And the crux of your piece was the fact that this was going to make history because it almost never happens in this way. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously Harry Potter, a new book coming out is going to be, and was, a huge deal. Everyone's going to want to buy it. The thing is, it came out as a script, as a play,
right.
And plays, in book form don't typically sell like a Harry Potter book sells.
Have you ever purchased a play in book form other than for school?
Me personally, but I used to do drama in high school, so I've read plays and have, I kind of enjoy reading scripts, but so for people who aren't nerds like I am, reading a play isn't necessarily something that you would do, on your free time, unless.
I'm taking you off course here, but I'm kind of glad that you do. So explain for people, if they pick up this book, what the difference in the read would be for them.
Yeah, so, it doesn't read like a novel. When you're reading a script, there are stage directions and scene directions that sort of lay out, what you would see on stage, and who would be entering, exiting, pretty much every little detail, so that the actors and all of the crew know what's going on and what's to be expected. And so it just kind of throws a little bit of a for some people, a wrench in the way that you would, follow a book.
It's a different flow. There's not flow of the story.
Yeah, not necessarily, better or worse. Just kind of depends on what you're into and what you're used to.
And so now, Trey, we know that you're one of those guys who likes that, but not many people do. Those books don't usually sell very many copies, if they're even published at all. How did Harry do over the weekend?
Well, so we don't know yet exactly how it did over the weekend. There aren't official numbers yet. Scholastic said that they plan to release weekend numbers tomorrow, actually.
Okay.
I assume that means that there's it's probably a lot of numbers to, count up from a lot of different distributors.
Right.
But it was, the most pre-ordered book for Barnes & Noble. It was the most pre-ordered book for Amazon. So that's a little telling.
Yeah, it's going to do pretty well. There's another quote here, and you seem specifically qualified to answer to this then, too.
I don't know about that. We'll see.
Self-professed play geek. In America, for whatever, this is a quote that you have in your piece. In America, for whatever reason, drama isn't really considered literature. Speak to that for me for a second or two.
Yeah, when he said that, and I believe that's the independent publisher that I spoke with.
Right, Gold was his name.
Right. It caught me off guard at first, but then it made sense. It seems like here in the U.S., when we, like you said at the very beginning of this interview, when we think about plays and scripts and stage works, really we're talking about academics and reading that in schools. It's not something that is, put on a sort of literary pedestal. It doesn't seem to be something that is, at least in the media or like in society, is really considered as a literary form, more of like a stage, an artistic kind of thing.
Reading the play is like the compulsory part of the Olympics in gymnastics. If you're reading the play, it's something you, by and large, have to do in class. So it's kind of nice that people are going to do that for pleasure this week.
Yeah. And I actually, I know people who went out, got the book, and have finished it.
Right.
Yeah, and loved it.
One other thing, then, is this book isn't altogether written by J.K. Rowling, is it?
No, it's not. There are two other people who kind of conceptualized the story along with her. That is the director of the actual play in London, and then the actual book, the script, was written by Jack Thorne, who is a British author and who's written some other scripts as well.
Trey Williams, MarketWatch.com reporter. Trey, it's nice to talk to you. I hope we can do so again.
Me.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.